Hi, I'm Brian Cohen.
And I'm H. Claire Taylor. Have you struggled to keep up with the fast-changing world of self-publishing?
Do you want to learn the latest news, tips, and tactics to help you sell more books now and into the future?
Welcome to the Sell More Books Show, a weekly podcast that gives you all the info you need to know in under an hour.
To save you time, give you motivation, and boost your publishing profit.
Enough waffling. Let's get started.
Okay, Claire, on with the show. Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Sell More Book Show, episode 336. I'm Brian Cohen from Amazon Ad School and Best Page Forward, joined by H. Claire Taylor from FFS.media. Claire, thank you again for taking the brunt of the reading last week. I will admit I'm not fully recovered, but I am feeling good enough to split the load a little bit here today. How are you doing?
I'm doing great today. I'm having a laid back day. It's a little rainy outside, which is just, feels like such a gift after,
that's
after
like
a very
Texas
long
miracle.
Texas summer.
Yeah.
Oh, the rain is so lovely. So I'm doing well. And I didn't mind reading last week. At least I could do for you to show up when you weren't feeling good.
Thank you. Thank you. And I do always appreciate it. Over here, it's raining as well, which is a common Chicago occurrence. We have this like rain jacket of the traveling toddler sort of thing. We have this jacket that's 18 months, so it should have stopped fitting a long time ago. But it's this rain jacket with a bunny on it that Riley just... It's still not even like a midriff thing. It still like covers her belly and keeps her dry. And when all the other clothes go up to 4T, she remains in this 18-month jacket.
Yeah, I know a thing or two about fitting myself in clothes that don't fit me anymore.
Yeah.
I learned a little something about that this year.
Yeah?
Uh-huh.
The pandemic pants.
Uh-huh. Or lack thereof. I had to put on pants last night because I went out. There was like a friend of ours had arranged a private screening of Tenet. And I was like, oh cool. Yeah, like masks on, private screening, 12 of us in a theater. And I was like, you know what? I will put on pants for this. It was a tight squeeze.
But not into the theater, thankfully.
Right. Plenty of space in the theater.
I'm glad to hear that you have experience in that. And maybe, you know, in the future, I can ask for Riley-related advice for that. But you finished your course.
I did.
And there's a load off of your brain and shoulders, it seems. Mm-hmm. How does it feel to finish the Supercharge Your Series course?
It feels great, Brian. And I actually have an AMA coming up on Thursday, September 10th. So that'll be the day after this releases. It will be at like a, you can go to the Facebook event. It's going to be over Zoom, just a small little thing. So any story questions anyone has, or if they have a question about the course, or they want like a quick little, you know, I'm stuck on this one thing. Can you help me? I am going to be opening up for questions on September 10th. And you can go to www.ffs.media/AMA. And that will take you to the event page where you can RSVP and then join me. So that's sort of a fun thing just to say hello to people, because I know I've kind of been like buried deep in the course creation. And so I just want to check in and see how everyone's doing, all the people I've worked with or new people. You don't have to have taken any of the courses to come to the AMA.
It's tough when you're deep in with creating a course, much like when you're creating a book, it's tough to think about, oh, now I need to tell people about this thing, which is the same challenge that I think a lot of authors face on the marketing book side is, oh, wait, I wrote this and now I have to market it. And it is,
for sure,
it is tough, but I like you providing face time. And I think that is helpful for authors to consider as well.
Yeah. I mean, personally, I don't know how you handle that, but I have just sort of accepted that my focus is such that when I'm on a project, it's like I can taste blood and I should just go for it and like really dive in deep until it's done. And then I can like make amends after for everything I've neglected. Like I've tried to kind of go back and forth and it just makes me so irritable and I don't do it very well. But I'm like, all right, we're just going to go whole hog into this and then we'll fix any relationships afterwards.
I am similar in that. If I am making good progress with something, I follow the progress. Because if I don't go while everything is already warmed up in my brain, it's going to be tough to pick it back up on another occasion.
For sure. And you know, it's like, that's what, it's the important thing, right? It's that one thing, getting the book or the course or whatever project created. If you have to just do one thing every day, that's what you need to be doing. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, there's nothing to market. So that's what I tell myself, at least. True.
I think you're telling yourself the right thing.
Not all lies. I do tell myself a lot of lies.
Don't we all? It helps us get out of bed in the morning. So speaking of your courses, we have the winner of your Supercharge Your Story course. That is longtime commenter, Darren Sapp. Darren, just reach out to Claire at contact@ffs.media to claim your prize. Let's start off with our patrons. AKR Scott's book, In Harmonic, A Twist of Fate Stole Her Home. Magic could help reclaim her voice or cost her everything. In Harmonic is the spellbinding first book in the Music Maker series of fantasy novels. If you like tenacious heroines, ancient mysteries, and new twists on fantasy magic, then you'll love AKR Scott's lyrical tale that is In Harmonic. And we have the links always on the Sell More Book Show website. On to you, Claire.
We have Dead Still by Barbara Ebel, aka Dr. Barbara. What if you were suddenly paralyzed in the recovery room, finally liberated from the 2-year confinement of lecture halls and gross anatomy? Annabelle Tilson is a medical student working in her first clinical rotation. She has high hopes of mastering the basics of patient care like her famous neurosurgeon father. However, she soon realizes that studying for exams and taking care of patients is only part of the complex burden of her role as a surgical team member. That's Dead Still. This sounds like something you would like, Brian, with your love for Grey's Anatomy.
Grey's Anatomy. Uh-huh. No lie, we are in the midst of a rewatch and just watch the episode where there's a cyber attack and they want $20 million to turn all the computers back on. And
it's
a two-parter.
It's over the dark web?
Yeah, dark web. It's in Bitcoin. They want 5,000 Bitcoin. So... and the third book of today is Pendant by M.L. Hamilton, a field trip gone awry, a student gone missing, every teacher's worst nightmare. Elaine Sutterfield's teaching skills are surpassed only by her passion for her middle grade students. But she's never gotten over the disappearance of one of her favorites from a field trip that she supervised. Now, years later, Elaine spots Jenny's distinctive pendant hanging from the neck of another young girl, and she vows to find out the truth. But someone else is desperate to keep it buried, desperate enough to kill. That's a cool setup there. I really like, you know, the hook on that one. That is Pendant by M.L. Hamilton. Go check that out, and you could become a patron of the show and get your book read on the show at patreon.com/SMBS. Claire, I always hog the question. You can read the question and the first response.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I didn't want to say anything.
I know.
I've just been letting those fester inside me. Okay, so the question of the week from last week. Do you think Amazon warrants some kind of antitrust action and should be split up into different companies to further competition? And how might that affect self-publishing in the years going forward? So Sarah B. said, regardless of should or shouldn't, from the author side of things, it's worth considering what would happen to all the books and audiobooks that are tied to Amazon exclusively. Would authors who sell on Amazon get their rights back or lose ability to sell their books at all until the bureaucratic dust settles? Or would the rights be transferred to the new smaller entities and the authors drug along with their books? So this, you still own the rights when you publish on Amazon. So unless you're with, you know, one of their publishers and you have given them rights, then you are free to leave at any time. So I don't think you need to worry about this as an author, right,
Brian? Yeah, it might be more of the audiobook 7-year thing that she's thinking of.
Right, with Audible and ACX.
Yeah, but absolutely. I mean, those rights are yours. Just even if you go exclusively, like I still have people who are like, well, my paperbacks are only on Amazon because I'm in KU. And it's like, no, paperbacks are not related. It's only the ebook edition. So I'm sure that surprised at least one person who was listening today.
There's a lot to learn.
There's a lot to learn. John Evans said, no, I don't think Amazon should be split up or Google. Microsoft is different because they don't provide good products. Apple too. Split them up. I don't care, but don't punish Google for being the only search engine that's useful and Amazon for being the best at online retail. Very interesting thoughts from John.
Dory H., who said, I mean, this is a great response, Dory. On the one hand, we have Amazon, a humble little book retailer whose owner enjoys using sensitive data on others selling on his marketplace, imposing MFNs, losing money on a product to hurt a rival, consuming the competition for breakfast, and taking long walks on the beach of the Space Coast. On the other hand, we have the Big Five, the champions of a robust, diverse, and competitive publishing industry, who have spent the last few decades steadily gobbling up the rest of the aforementioned robust, diverse, and competitive publishing industry. Pot meet kettle, kettle meet pot. Pointed words.
That is a good one, Dory.
I love a good bit of sarcasm.
You do.
You know, it's nice. It's refreshing. It wakes me up and makes me feel something.
Yeah.
I don't know that I agree entirely.
Yeah.
But I agree mostly.
Yeah. Fair enough. And we always do appreciate your comments. Thank you for taking the time and Dory for taking the time on some nice sarcasm, which is always appreciated. All right, let's hop into the tip of the week and I'm up first.
And now on the Sell More Books Show, it's the tip of the week.
Tip number one, Variety Pack. Self-publishing expert Dale Roberts recently conducted a cool experiment to see how much book cover he could get for his money. Roberts paid five designers on Fiverr to each create a cover for the same book. He didn't just choose at random, though. Roberts picked five designers at various experience levels and Fiverr ranks to see how they stacked up. He shares the detailed results of his experiment in his latest YouTube video with some surprising takeaways for fellow authors, including the ability to get a good cover at bargain prices. Although cover prices range from $30 all the way to $800, Roberts and his YouTube audience found something to love about each cover, with some particularly good work from the lowest priced sellers. You know, I actually did my first ever YouTube live with Dale. So it's nice to see a tip from him here. And he mentioned this. He was excited about the experiment. There's no guarantee that spending more money gets you a better cover. Claire, what are kind of like, you've gotten more books covered than I have by virtue of writing more novels than I have. Basically, all my workbooks are the same cover, so those don't count. What's been your experience with paying more and paying less? Like, is it similar?
Yeah, I don't think you can just say that you'll necessarily get a better product for paying more, but or that by paying less, you'll get a bad product. I don't think you can 100% link those two up. But in my experience, you do tend to get a much better product when you spend a little more. I mean, I hate to say it, like you can, I was watching his video kind of jumping through it this morning and he got some good stuff from the cheaper, you know, people, the cheaper artists. Mm-hmm. Got stuff that was just fine, right? And sometimes you need something that's just fine. But what he got from the like, you know, big time, expensive, experienced person was that step above that takes it from good and like, okay, and this will do to selling, you know, just really like breaking through and selling the copies. Mm-hmm. I mean, the jacket, it came with a full jacket. It came with like, you know, graphics and everything too. And so it was a big package. Yes, you paid a lot for it, but I think that's something to consider because you can get just a pretty good cover. But when you find that one that is just, it just nails it and you go, yeah. Oh yeah, that's going to sell so many books. So I have always found it to be worth paying a few hundred more for that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think in my experience, paying more to a vetted designer that they talk about, Dale talks about the levels on Fiverr. This is probably someone with hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of five-star reviews on Fiverr. You could parallel that with someone on their website having hundreds of testimonials or just word of mouth that you've talked to some people.
Or look at their portfolios.
Right.
I mean, I think that one of the other differences that was major is that when you hire someone who's kind of new, they can basically make to order. You know, like you tell them what you want and they'll put it on there. But when you get a really experienced cover designer, you tell them what you want and they go, no. Like that, you think you want that. And maybe that's what you want, but that's not what your readers want. And they know more than you. And that is so nice.
The old adage, you're not paying for the hours that have been put in, you're paying for the hundreds or thousands of hours of experience from that person. So it doesn't need to be done twice.
Absolutely. I love it when my cover designers, when I'm like, well, I don't think this is working. Can we do this other thing? And like, I make the suggestion of like, well, add some, you know, some glow here or whatever, you know, like some whatever. And they're like, no, we're not doing that. And I'm like, okay. You can say no to me. So you're hired, you know?
Exactly. All right. I think tip number two is up to you.
Access to readers. Readers want to buy from those they know, like, and trust. In a new series, the Alliance of Independent Authors, hashtag Ask Ally team, does a deep dive into author mailing lists, why to have them, how to set them up, how to grow them, manage them, and in each step, use them to build and sustain great relationships with your readers. Quote, carefully crafted emails are a great way for your readers to know, like, and trust you, writes the team. Once that happens, you don't have to persuade them to buy. They'll be hounding you about when your next book is out. For these reasons, email marketing is at the core of Ally's recommended access marketing method. Access, with a free extra S at the end, is a series of progressive actions taking readers on a relationship building journey via email. It starts with attract before moving to captivate, then connect, then engage, and subscribe. Once on your list, Access keeps them satisfied until they're ready to buy. If you've done the first six steps right, selling is easy.
As long as you can remember the acronym.
Yeah. Access.
I like the concept of putting these into repeatable steps. I was, when I talked a little bit more about email marketing and kind of my everyday work for authors, I talked about story, offer, question, and was always trying to like keep it so that there's a framework for this. Authors get scared of writing emails. It's like it becomes more real. Like, I actually have to talk to these readers. No, can't they just buy the book and then buy right. the next book? Like, can't that be it? So I like what Ally's doing here with this series.
Yeah, and I think the important thing to know is because there are a lot of different frameworks out there for email. There are a lot of different ones. And some of them are going to conflict naturally in what they say to do first, second, third, fourth, fifth, 10th, 20th, you know. I think the important thing is to just pick one. Like, they're all going to work pretty well. Like the well-known ones are going to work pretty well, and they're better than whatever slapdash seat of your pants thing you're doing based on your moods for the day. Like, they're going to be more effective as an email strategy than that. So I think if you can pick one, if you want to pick this one, great, and just learn it and stick to it.
Yeah, I've got a new framework called Denied. Access Denied. All right, let's go on to number three. Put a pin in it. If you're not using Pinterest as a book marketing tactic, you might want to give it a try, writes BookBub's Diana Urban. Pinterest is not only one of the largest social networks, but also a powerful search engine that readers turn to for answers and entertainment. Nonfiction authors can use Pinterest to find readers looking to solve a problem. Fiction authors can attract users with interests common to their genre's readers. Some authors are creating Pinterest boards that detail the research that went into their book, the art that inspired their worlds, or even the actors who readers imagine in the roles of their favorite characters. Quote, while Pinterest is one of the most popular social networks, not every author will find a relevant audience on the platform, writes Urban. Most of Pinterest users are female, and the demographics skew younger, so some genre authors might have a harder time building a fan base than others, end quote. For 35 examples of authors using Pinterest to sell ebooks, check out the article on the BookBub blog. Interesting story. Well, I guess you'll be the judge of that, but story. So I was reading a post from one of my favorite sources to quote, Pierre-Alex Jonty, who is a seven-figure author, posts on the 20 Books to 50K group, big time into advertising on platforms that allow you to keep the information rather than on Amazon, where you aren't able to pixel in any way yet, hopefully someday. But I remember talking about this post, and Alex mentioned Pinterest. He's like, well, we started to do Pinterest ads. And I remember mentioning this in some slides and saying, people are going to hear this post and like dot, dot, dot. They're going to want to get the shiny object of Pinterest. And in the meantime, between one slide bullet and the other, I see several people in the comments, ooh, Pinterest. And it's like automatically the shiny object gets attention because it is shiny. Doesn't mean you should drop everything and use Pinterest. As I've said before, if you don't feel confident or comfortable in your plan, anybody else's plan is going to seem better. And you kind of need to, like, kind of like you just said with the email framework, choose something and run with it. Don't get like pulled in 20 different directions.
Right. And the thing about Pinterest is that it is easy to sort of use and figure out, but that doesn't mean it's easy to use effectively. There are a lot of people. I mean, I've looked into it because my readers fit this demographic.
Right.
And I thought this might be something interesting to get going. And at the time, I just had my assistant look into it, read about it, and start making pins for it. And she did it all behind the scenes, and she did an amazing Pinterest account and like boards and everything for my cozy mysteries. And that took off. But I don't have the time to do that. So then when I went back to it later, because I'm thinking, okay, I might do this for the detective book that I've been writing because true crime is very much women in this demographic. I started looking at different like ad agencies that will run it for you. I mean, this is big time. This isn't just like a hobbyist's advertising right. platform.
It's a real deal.
It is. It is a real deal. And you can do it for free, right? You can create pins that link to your content. And I think if you're already creating content and it's easy enough for you to do, great. I'm going to be using it for blogs that I'm going to be doing. And I'm going to do a podcast associated. It's going to be very much a behind the scenes podcast for the making of this novel. I've done it with the casting of my characters for books and that sort of thing. It's very easy to do that sort of thing, but I don't know that it's necessarily been effective. I mean, I go and I look and it says, you know, 5,000 like repins a month or something. And I'm like, well, what does that mean? Is that translating right. sales? I can't tell. So
it's like trying to get more likes on Facebook. It's not like right. that is necessarily going to mean anything.
Right. So I think you have to be very careful before you, because it's not just like you can putz around and, you know, figure it out. You need to have a plan if you're going to spend time on it. And if this is your target audience, though, if like women in their, you know, 20s, 30s, 40s is your audience, this is a great place. I will say there are a lot of success stories happening.
That's awesome. Well, thanks for sharing your experience, because I didn't have any really on Pinterest.
I also planned my wedding on Pinterest.
Ooh, you were making some bell jars and using those. And
I was pawning off mason jars on people for months after my wedding.
Oh, that's amazing. I'm not going to lie. We did some Pinteresting for ours too. So, awesome. Well, we are in for number five, and I believe you are up.
It's time for the Sell More Books Show Top 5 News. Number 5.
Ship it good. While the post office is struggling to stay funded, Amazon is now delivering 66% of its own packages, reports Frank Holland of CNBC, up from 54% the same time last year. Amazon has shipped 415 million packages in July, compared with a monthly average of 389 million between April and June, says Satish Jindal of ShipMatrix. Quote, Amazon is such a huge player, they have to manage their delivery themselves to handle the increased demand for online orders, especially during the pandemic, says Jindal. Amazon is on track to deliver 80% of their own packages by next year, forcing UPS and the USPS to look for something to replace the lost Amazon business. All right.
Not directly related to books.
Yeah, I was about to say, in a home, maybe like paperbacks, workbooks.
The thing is with paperbacks and workbooks, and as we were kind of dealing with in April, there were added shipping delays, and some of that is still perpetuating with an extra added ship time. This will really tie in deeply with another one of the stories we'll be sharing a little later, but in a way, this ties in with our question of the week from last week. Like, Amazon is grabbing this other part of the market, almost being their own shipping company.
It's almost like if you ran oil and then you bought all the train track, like all the train companies. I don't know if this.
That is, yeah.
I just pulled that out of thin air.
Never happened before.
No.
And so it is funny to see the extra parallels there. But Amazon, if they make the shipping continue to be way easier than anywhere else, of course they're gonna do better. If it's so rare that I get a lost package related to Amazon, it's very, very rare.
Stolen, not rare. Lost.
It's rare that it's happened, and when it does happen, it's easy to deal with. When something gets lost, USPS, or gets lost or delayed and you have to go to some place to get it, like, that never happens to me with Amazon packages. And so, like, when you make things an easier experience for your customers, and this goes to authors as well, if you make people jump through six hoops to leave you a review, or you make them a landing page with 20 links on it to sign up for your email list, you make it harder for the reader. And then you wonder, well, like, why isn't anyone signing up to my email list? It's like, well, have you been through your own process? You have to like click six check boxes and not get distracted by the other URLs on there. You make it easy, you make it seamless, and your business does better.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Any other thoughts on the shipping fun?
I think that it's probably smart of Amazon to do this, especially because they are building these warehouses. So they want, you know, they build the warehouses for convenience, and then they can just deliver it themselves rather than having to wait. We live right near a big Amazon warehouse, and it's like, you know, same time every day, you see all the trucks pouring out, and we get our packages one day real easy. But yeah, I don't think you can really compare it to USPS, because USPS isn't like a business. It's infrastructure, right? It's a national infrastructure. So its job is just to make sure that everyone has access. Mm-hmm. So I think that definitely it could be improved by taking some tips from Amazon.
Right.
But it's never going to, you know, be that, because it doesn't have the money coming in that Amazon has.
Yeah, this is true.
So I think that saying, like, replacing lost business, he said, you know, and this it talks about, like, USPS needs to look for something to replace the lost business from Amazon that Amazon's taking. I don't think that it does.
Nor does it want to.
Right.
It's like, take it.
Right. I don't need my bridges to be profitable. I just need them to be there when it's time to cross.
Yeah.
And know that they're not going to collapse. So.
This is good. This is a good infrastructure quote. Awesome. Moving on to number four.
Number four.
Lockdown lessons. When March 2020 arrived, no one was expecting a global lockdown. New habits and routines were needed, and many found their creativity went out the window. Now, The Alliance of Independent Authors is sharing some valuable lessons authors have taken from this time. When it comes to creative conditions, the lesson for authors is that in order to write, you might need to beg, borrow, or steal the time and space to write and publish. Quote, whatever conditions you need, writes the hashtag AskAli team, do what you need to get them, end quote. While the Big Five have been struggling to keep new books in stock, there's good news for indie authors selling online. Quote, it's the physical bookstore model that favors frontlist newer books, says the team. But a book is new to a reader the day they discover it. If it's evergreen, the publication date is irrelevant. The best news of all. Lockdown has accelerated digital behaviors on some readers who were previously reluctant to transition. One of the clearest coronavirus lockdown lessons for authors is to embrace digital and online selling. Lots of things here, Claire. What sticks out to you the most from this one?
Well, I just love that there is this silver lining that so many more people have gotten e-readers since the lockdown started. I mean, it really, like, it just goes to show that you really have to push people. We have the new adopters. We have, you know, the early adopters. We have most of the bulk, but I feel like we're getting a little bit more of the center of that bell curve, you know, onto e-readers and that sort of thing, which is great news for indies. I also really like that it talks about, where it talks about it's new as soon as the reader discovers it. Because, I mean, there is some truth that Amazon is not always as helpful to books that have been out for a while. But if you're running ads, your reader is not going to be like, oh, this is published in 2015. I mean, I don't know of any readers whose habit is to scroll all the way down the details page to see when it was published, right? And especially if you have like 5, 6, 9 books in a series, they're going to understand that they didn't all come out this year. Right? Like no one's been trained. That isn't like a trained reading habit to be like, I need all of the series to come out in the same year. So yeah, I think that the publication date is irrelevant to most people as long as it says, you know, that it's applicable still. Like if you're writing a nonfiction about, I don't know, Facebook ads and it's from 2014, I'm not buying that.
Right.
But most fiction is still relevant. Most parenting books are still relevant. So yeah. I do like that idea. I don't know. Just that sentiment is nice.
I think so too. I was posting about this in my Amazon Ad School group that a significant number of books that I sell every month were published in 2012. And they honestly sold significantly better when I started pushing more resources into Amazon ads in 2019. And then they were, a lot of them being workbooks for kids, have now grown by leaps and bounds into 2020. And these are books that were published 8 years ago. And so I think I seem to recall this was like an NBC pitch for people watching reruns of Seinfeld. But if you haven't seen it, it's new to you. And that is a comforting thought here.
Exactly. And we talk a lot about finding the right readers, but there's another dimension to that, right? You have to find the right readers at the right time. And right readers now could be wrong readers later and vice versa. So you never know. You got to keep working on your backlist because I know some points in my life, like I can't handle any horror, right? Like I can't do any scary books. And then sometimes I'm like, I need to breathe this in right now. And so if you find something, especially if you've seen it before, you're more likely to be like, oh yeah, that has that familiarity that seems enticing. I know this from somewhere. So yeah, I think never give up on your backlist.
Yeah, absolutely. And never give up on number three.
Number three.
Virtual bodyguards. Agents are demanding that publishers protect authors during virtual book events, reports Jane Friedman in the Hot Sheet newsletter. With Zoom and other video tools common since the pandemic began, some events have been infiltrated and disrupted by trolls, and authors have been the target of racial threats during online events. In response to the problem, dozens of agents have signed an open letter posted on Medium. The letter calls on publishers to protect authors from harassment during virtual events, demanding formal registration for events, a monitor guarding against inappropriate behavior, and even a breakdown of the steps that will be taken by the host to ensure a safe and secure event. Quote, "While the guidelines generally amount to common sense for hosting an event online," says Friedman, "how much publishers can or will closely monitor the setup of the bookstores, schools, libraries, festivals, and other organizations amounting to tens of thousands of events per year is questionable."
Thank you. They're right. It is a little bit questionable. But we just started this in a way as a society becoming this Zoom virtual society by necessity right now. We're still figuring this stuff out.
Growing pains.
It sounds like the agents are outraged that publishers didn't do this thing that they had no idea would be happening. Hopefully the call for action here will help some action to be taken. I haven't been Zoom bombed too often. And every so often someone accidentally pops in, but no one malicious quite yet.
Yeah, I assume this is for the much larger events that allow. I mean, I don't even know why you allow commenting on those. like shut down the chat. I know that I'm kind of like a snob about that. Like, not everyone needs a voice all the time. But yeah, I think this is something that has to be considered, and it makes a lot of sense that we're to this point now where we have shifted. This is becoming the new normal, and we need to get some stuff in place. Yeah. For some things we did not anticipate. And I hope that not just the publishers, but everyone who is involved
doing
in these,
Zooms,
can think about this ahead of time. Because, yeah, it is hard to come on Zoom and, like, talk. And what makes it worse is stuff like racial threats. I can't imagine anyone wanting to get back on Zoom after that. You know, so people are being vulnerable when they come and talk about their books. So I think it's smart to ask for a little protection.
I've been using password protection more and more with larger Zoom events. I think that it's smart to protect yourself and to learn more about the security options. And if you plan to run any kind of online virtual things, I've now run multiple online virtual things in a variety of mediums. Authors in the indie world are probably a little more fortunate to have been doing similar things for a while. But if you're new to it, learn about the protections that you can put in place.
Right. I mean, you're going from in-person events where there is accountability because someone sees your face. If you shout something rude, everyone's going to look at you and be like, dude, shut up. But now we're online and it's got that anonymity, and the accountability is a lot trickier.
This is true. Well, hopefully no one comes and bombs your Zoom while we are recording these wonderful episodes. Now I feel like it's going to be a challenge.
I know. Mixed things
up. Sorry about that. All right, let's get into number two.
Number two.
Bye, bye, bye. Did not sing it. I thought about it. The Amazon buy button is changing, reports Dan Holloway of Ally. A very Ally episode. I think they're the only ones who had news in this short week. Amazon's buy button is the holy grail for many sellers, says Holloway. When a customer wants to buy a product, it's the thing they hit, end quote. While most just click and buy, new changes to the way the buy button will work in 2021 might cause issues for authors. Currently, if someone wants a new copy of your paperback book, they click the buy button and a book is printed on demand. But starting next year, people selling new condition items will be able to earn that buy button. While the threat to indie sales is somewhat low due to a lack of used indie paperbacks floating around, many authors are concerned that resellers of like new books will still find a way to earn the buy button and the sale, leading to zero royalties for the author. Can't be a complete zero royalties if someone bought the book in order to have a used copy. So
right.
I'll put that out there. But Claire, this is something that small presses and even some larger trad houses have been dealing with for the last year or two. And there was always a chance that this could impact print on demand books. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I think first and foremost, it's important to remember that Amazon doesn't care about the sellers, it cares about the buyers. And it wants to make the experience optimal for the people buying things. So in that regard, this feature is better for the buyers if they can get it cheap from someone else. They don't care who they get it from. Or they might, you know, there's some people who do buy that go, no, I want to buy from the author. But by and large, that behavior is not always going to happen. Although what I found when I go to a product and it says there's like new stuff, you go in there and it'll list it real cheap, right? Ooh, the product's normally $15.99. This has it for $11, you know, $32 or whatever weird price they put. Yeah. And you're like, great. And then you go in and you look at it and it's like $9.99 shipping. And you're like, what? It rarely, that from what I found, is that competitive. And I would rather just get it direct then go through and pay for shipping. And that's my own mental thing, but I feel like that's probably pretty common because when the shipping's really high, you're like, I would rather pay more on the actual product and less on the shipping. But I mean, I don't know that it's going to be a huge thing. This has always been a thing. People can always resell books. Mm-hmm. That's what Half Price Books exists to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen it for ages and I've seen my books used and whatnot, like books that I unpublished that I had in paperback. There's like some $400 copy somewhere that no one's ever going to buy. Money laundering, who knows what they're doing with that. But like,
hopefully something fun.
Hopefully, something to write home about.
Yeah.
With a vintage copy of Ted Saves the World. But I think that we could be nervous and scared about as many things as we want to be. But in reality, ain't nobody got time for this.
Oh, we've got enough
craziness. We were talking about off the air, the uncertainty in the world and how the human mind gets all out of whack when it comes to so much uncertainty. It's easy to spiral. And this seems like something that if it became a problem, we could always figure something else out, like selling copies on our website and us buying them from the right retailer. Like there's things that can be done if this becomes a problem, but until it becomes a problem, let's deal with the problems that we're already facing.
Let's deal with now problems. Well, and I think it goes back to the importance of maintaining that email list, because that is your way of limiting uncertainty on these other platforms.
Yes.
Amazon could shut down Amazon ads. They could add this buy button. They could do all kinds. They could cut your royalties to 35%. They could do all kinds of things. And that's scary to think about. So might I suggest not thinking about it and just build, serenity prayer on that. But you want to build that platform so that if something does happen, you have that stability. You can reach out to your email list and go, you know what? So here's the deal. Don't buy from there. Here's the link to buy from. And now you have all your fans in a new place. And so you do you do have some control. So I think it goes back to that.
And it even plays into the email list thing is one. Doing custom type things on Kickstarter where get to put out your own paperback or hardcover or leather bound edition. Mm. You get to promote that yourself on your Kickstarter's not your own website, but your own control over that whole process. It just goes to another layer where you can kind of take Amazon or an unknown out of the equation if you truly want to.
Yes.
So, cool. We're into the top story of the week, and it's up to you.
And now the number one top five news item.
Volume, volume, volume. Quote, give away a year's worth of work for free? Are you crazy? This is the response many authors have to giving away their book for free. But after trying it, many find it can be one of the best marketing tools available. L.E. Wilson had a 4-book series. Sales were okay, but they were not where she wanted them. So she decided to take a leap of faith. Quote, I needed to do something to get more exposure, grow my brand, and increase my earnings, Wilson wrote in her guest post for the BookBub blog. The author made the first book in her series, Permafree, and started submitting it to email newsletter services such as BookBub. Once she got the coveted BookBub feature deal, she set up additional promotions, stacking them to keep the focus on her free book, getting over 16,000 downloads on the first day alone. The best part of this deal is that it led to sales. Readers who downloaded the first book for free have been reading through the rest of the series and the next and the one after that. The week before, I was averaging 35 sales per day. The week after, I averaged hundreds of sales per day. And that tail, though it has dropped a little, is still going.
Getting a BookBub is still great, but
yeah, that's just in extra, extra.
But let's talk a little bit about 2016, 27 tactics.
Yeah.
Not 27, 2017 tactics.
27 dresses and 2016 tactics.
Mm-hmm. Katherine Heigl is deeply involved in this story. So if you only assume things that are talked about in 2020 are going to be successful, you miss out on things that maybe don't work quite as well as they did in 2017. There were people back in the day who, when Amazon sales rank worked differently and they put a book free and then they made like $1 million after it came back to paid because it continued to rank extremely high in the store. Yeah, Amazon got rid of that because it was obviously a gaming the system sort of thing. But that doesn't mean that free doesn't still have a place, and not necessarily just with Permafree. You can use a free first in series with your KDP free days. Claire, you have Wide Books. You have Books in KU. Have you utilized free in any kind of promotions?
I have, and I continue to. I do want to preface this by saying, if you have a book that is going to not appeal to a wide audience, you have to expect that when you put a book free, people are not going to vet it as hard. And so my books that have a lot of cursing in them or are just kind of weird or have something that some people may have a strong reaction to, I think twice before putting those free, because what happens is you put it up, people don't vet it. They get it, they read it, they leave you 1-star reviews because they're like, this isn't the book I wanted it to be.
Yeah.
So if your marketing is all, like if your branding is all lined up, you make it very clear from the cover what genre it is, who will like it, and it's sort of, you know, right on the money on that, then if you make it free, you're more than likely going to attract all the right readers, and it can be very effective if you have enough books in the series for read-through.
Right, right. And that has been the common thing. When you have a free book, I have a couple of perma-free books out there. I have a permanently free business book that ended up getting over 600 reviews. It's had like something like 300,000 downloads. It's been ridiculous. And it is my lowest reviewed book because, like you just said, this isn't the book for me. This isn't what I was looking for. 1-star. And while I think free has been touted as something to get more reviews, those reviews may be lower in star ranking. It'll be closer to like a Goodreads kind of review, mm-hmm, where you're going to get just a quick little poorly written 1-star review. It's just bound to happen. Now, obviously, this is a results not typical situation with getting the BookBub feature deal. Is it worth putting a book that is in KU free and running discount promotions that aren't BookBub?
Yes. Yes. I think it depends on what you're doing, where you are in your series. I know that for my series that I finished up, it's got 13 books in it, that I want to apply for not only a BookBub, but every 90 days, I will go through and apply to the promotion sites that I know work.
Yeah.
And I'll do first free, second, third, 99 cents to really get people in. And I do, that's a KU series. So yep, the benefit to that is that you're going to boost the rank of your books and you're going to have more people buy the low price, but you're also going to boost the visibility and you're going to get a lot of KU readers. And that's where you, because some people will just borrow it, even if it's free, they'll borrow it on KU and they'll read it and you'll get paid for page reads. So, you know, it works everywhere. I think it's an effective way to keep your backlist going for you. Eventually, those promo lists will start to decline in, you know, efficacy for you because you have used them so many times, but there are other things to do at that point. I have said some things about first book free, but it's really, you know, like, I don't know about it, but I have been doing it more and more. And I think that it is working. I think there are a lot of new readers into new genres, just more people buying ebooks, right? We have more e-readers. I feel like I'm finding a lot of fresh readers with it. And the read-through does go down significantly. It's very hard to calculate your read-through once you've made a book free. I don't know. It works. And it works wide really well too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's often touted as more of a wide tactic. But like you mentioned, Amazon is always incentivizing KU. It wants new KU people. I've still guessed that the real purpose of Amazon Books is to sell Kindle e-readers and KU subscriptions. Until I'm proven wrong, I'm going to stick with that. But, or it's a real estate play. But anyway, KU, the button for read for free is still emphasized in the order. It's still the KU button comes first when a book in Kindle Unlimited has been priced down to free. And so if someone clicks the first button they see and they're in KU, they won't get the book for free. They'll get the book on KU. And so you'll get the pages read just by the virtue of Amazon ordering the buttons in a particular way.
Right. And I can't imagine that it would hurt for a KU reader to see that a book is free and then see that the rest of the series is also in KU.
Right. Right.
You know, they're like, okay, great. I can read this entire thing for free. Sure.
Yep.
Let's jump in. Exactly. So you do get that visibility on the free books.
Yeah. And you, for what it's worth, you can also run ads to a permanently free or free book, temporarily free, but Amazon does tend to send a little more traffic that way. So you can usually get away with a lower bid to the free books, just so you know. That you, if you put the regular low bids of 30 to 35 cents, you may suddenly see all of your budget being used because Amazon.
Yeah, I mean, it's just not a bad idea. If you have a series that you haven't done much for and you don't want to put a whole lot of energy into it at the moment because you're writing some other series, set the first free, stack some promos to it during that free week or perma-free, you know, whatever, and then just let the read-through happen. It's great.
Awesome. Well, thank you. This has been another fun show. We need a question of the week. Claire, of the subjects of free books and the buy button being taken and things not to worry about, virtual bodyguards, lessons learned from lockdown, shipping, Pinterest, email lists, and the cover design experiment, do you have anything in particular you'd like to hear more about?
I do. I think since it's a rainy day for both of us,
yes,
we should look for, you know, a silver lining. So what about a question like, what is one benefit that you're experiencing that you don't think would have happened without the pandemic?
Yeah. No, I like that. I don't think there even needs to be any rephrasing. So that's a really nice one. You can answer the question of the week of what is a benefit you've received during this time that would not have happened without the pandemic. I, even just thinking about it, like getting to spend a large chunk of March and April of more time with my daughter, super awesome benefit. It was not productive for my business necessarily, but so great getting to spend more time with her. It was just a blessing. So you can answer your own answer to the benefit question at sellmorebookshow.com in the comment section for episode 336. Do you have one that came to mind, Claire?
Oh, I think that it has made me really appreciate some things that I was not appreciating in my daily life, like just being in my home.
Yeah.
And being like, I like my home. Like, I mm-hmm. like this. This is fine. This is nice. As far as business goes, it's a lot of energy, right?
Yeah.
It's very taxing to have this much uncertainty. And for me, I sort of maxed out because I also have the uncertainty of my husband has to go to work every day despite the sickness. And there, it, you know, I know this is going to surprise a lot of people, but not everyone is real big on cops right now. So there's a little bit of extra, you know, there's just a lot of crisis situation. A lot of things are bubbling up, which I totally get. But it makes you have to pare back. And it makes you really have to focus on what matters to you. And so I feel like I've discovered, like sort of rediscovered and reaffirmed my purpose a lot during this because of all those stressors.
That's awesome. That's really cool. Your answer was better than mine.
Your daughter is pretty.
Yeah, but cool. I played the dad card. That was like,
the cop wife card, if that's
I know. It's a good thing we have all these cards like laid out on the table. I know.
Draw four, Brian.
Yeah. Skip. Anyway.
Reverse, skip, reverse. I love skip, doing reverse, that. Skip, reverse, 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 reverse. Yeah.
How do we have so many of these cards in our Uno deck? Well, Claire, remind everybody of that Ask Me Anything URL so people can check that out on September 10th.
Yep. That is www.ffs.media/AMA.
Awesome. Cool. Definitely go check that out. You should record that in case you weren't going to, because I'm sure people would love to check out a replay on Facebook or something.
Yep.
Cool.
On it. I'm on it, Brian. On it.
Cool. I figured it. I'm just tired. So definitely go check out Claire's Ask Me Anything. I have some interesting stuff coming up soon. We'll be doing a 5 biggest mistakes authors make on their book descriptions webinar coming up 2 weeks and a day from when this is released. So stay tuned for that. October Challenge is coming up on October 12th, the day before my birthday. And so there's all sorts of wonderful things to look forward to. Claire, any words of wisdom that you'd like to share? See, notice how I'm elongating everything so that you have more time to think about it. Like, I'm trying to be a good co-host here.
You're really giving me a slow pitch. I know it. I recognize it. But I forgot my bat.
That's okay.
I will say that I went to a private screening of Tenet last night. And so my words of wisdom is it's not enough to like go to a full screening with people who are not going to be wearing their masks. Like, it's not worth dying over. It's pretty good, but it's not worth dying over. So that's what I would say to people.
Is that going to be the new rubric for movies?
Specific. Yeah, I think it should be. I absolutely think that there are some movies where I would be like, you know, this sucks, but that movie was really good.
Good to know. Well, if you can get a private... Not to be
flippant. I'm kidding. Please don't send me hate mail.
Well, I hope no one sends you hate mail. It's very wise words. Definitely go check out Claire's AMA. For H. Claire Taylor, I'm Brian Cohen. Thank you for listening as always. We'll be back next week. I hope you have a great week of book selling, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Sell More Book Show. Visit the website at www.sellmorebookshow.com for detailed show notes and subscription information, or to send us news or comments for use on the show. Also, please take a moment to subscribe to the show and leave us a review. Thank you very much for listening, and happy book selling!